S-I-G-H-T, distance. Other than that, I move to approve.
Second.
All in favor? Any comments?
Oh.
First of all, anyone, any other changes? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Perfect. All right. We're going to keep this moving right on. Greg, when do we do this? Because it's not really...
I should have listed.
That's all right.
I think probably just right at the end of business here.
Okay, so go through the deed manual.
Sure.
Okay, deed manual report and work.
I've got a slot on that, actually on the agenda, so we'll...
Oh, you do. That's
we'll,
right.
We'll
yeah.
move that down.
Okay, reviewing upcoming events.
Upcoming events on page 2 of your agenda there. As we see, a standard Board of County Councilors work sessions every Wednesday, 9 a.m. Please check the grid for actual work session topics and times. Board of County Councilor hearings typically on the first Tuesday of each month, as noted with the exception of the, every Tuesday, 10 a.m., with the exception as noted on the first Tuesday, it typically moves to an evening at 6 p.m. We have one work session scheduled, Title 40 Amendments to Support Housing, ADU, RADU, Cottage Housing. It'd be January 10th, 9 a.m. And for Planning Commission work sessions and hearings, the Planning Commission work session, Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area Ordinance Amendment on Thursday, January 4th, so this evening, 5:30 p.m. And then finally, public hearing, Planning Commission, Columbia Gorge, same topic here, Thursday, January 18th, 6:30 p.m.
Does anybody know how the PC hearing for the ADU and RADU cottage housing came out? Anybody?
No. No.
I'd be curious since we had some pretty specific recommendations.
That's interesting.
I'd like to at least.
Yeah, let's write that down.
I'd be happy to contact Colette and just ask her if she can provide us a summary update.
That'd be great.
And I'll send that back out to Dean. So
through email or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. See how that sounds.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other
leadership?
I'm almost giddy. I'm sorry. Any other upcoming events? No.
Nope.
Deed member announcements. Any? Well, I'm announcing that we do have an election, which I think we have to do an election.
Yes, right, we do.
Anyway, so.
Can we do that now?
Don't gloat yet.
Hey, he's not automatic. Somebody has to nominate
That's right.
stuff.
Is this when we want to do this, Greg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we are, every year we elect a new chair and vice chair?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And so
nominations are open?
I nominate Steve Bacon for chair.
Can I second? Or maybe I shouldn't.
I'll second.
Because I'm giddy.
Okay, there's a second. Do we do a vice chair?
No, we'll do those separately.
We'll do that
one at a time, obviously.
Separately.
Yeah. Assume.
Separately. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we got to win.
All in favor?
Aye.
Normally we do it. Anyone opposed? No? Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. Much more civil than Planning Commission. Congratulations.
Gee, thanks.
All right.
It was so unexpected.
Yeah. So as your first act as chair.
Vice chair. Well, actually, this is your meeting now.
Yep.
It's your meeting now.
We've all,
I think, right?
So yeah. I guess we need to elect vice chair for the next year. I would like to entertain some nominations.
Okay, well, second. That's exactly where I was going. Exactly where I was going.
Any other nominations?
None heard?
Sweet.
Trades on time.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a nomination for Jerry Wollum to become the vice chair for the 2018 year. Any discussion?
great choice.
Call for the question. So do we have a nomination, or do we have a motion?
Yeah, move second.
Second, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Abstained?
Yeah.
I was just going to say, oh.
Conflict of interest.
Even if he is abstained, we still have a quorum.
We're in good hands.
Even if he said no.
All right. So, with that out of the way, we will move right on in. A few minutes ahead of schedule. Sharon, you ready?
I am.
You're going to rub it in.
If they're not ready, I can...
We de-member announcements.
We did.
Oh, you have something
I thought that was the deep number.
Well, while she's figuring that out.
Oh, there we go.
I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to the article in the Columbian yesterday. And if you haven't had a chance to go online and look at the OFM's 2017 growth forecast, which
good article.
Very good article, but the full report isn't out yet by OFM, but they have a lot of neat graphs and stuff, and it basically says that they I don't want to say they fessed up, that they goofed, but they said that they undershot Clark County, King County, Sunoco, Pierce, some of the other large urban counties this last cycle. And so I don't know what that means for the county in terms of moving forward with another plan, but I would assume that those discussions might start underway.
James, do you think that's going to play with this other legislation that was passed?
Yeah, so the other legislation that is going into effect now, I think it's
December 2018 we were supposed to.
Yeah. They've got a consultant already on board to look at vacant buildable lands models. And they have to have a report done by the end of the year. That could also impact how we account for land for urban growth capacity. So just two interesting things afoot, sort of on the
happening at the same time.
So either one of those things could be cause to reopen
land.
And I think our commissioners, if I'm not mistaken, are... Or at least have discussed. Correct?
Yeah. The potential.
The potential of looking at the plan. So.
But I would encourage everybody to go to the OFM site and look at the graphs, because it's actually a pretty interesting read.
All right.
Ready?
We're ready. Are you?
Kind of. Technology's a little challenging today. So my name is Sharon Lee von Tobing. I'm with Clark County Community Planning. And we have some code amendments to Title 40, 240, Columbia River Gorge National Scenic Area. And we haven't had updates to this since 2011. So I just wanted to give a brief background of what our involvement in the gorge is, and then describe two relatively minor code changes.
That is a stunning picture, by the way.
You know,
what
just,
a way to start
you,
out. That is amazing. Look at that.
That's a more good photo.
I'm glad that you brought that up. Could you email that to us?
Yeah.
Or to me, anyway. That's a great screensaver. No, I'm sorry. I was thinking the same thing. That's a little digression, but that is a stunning picture. So, thank you.
You know that's from Oregon.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Yeah. It's available on Microsoft Windows as well.
Windows 95.
Is it really? Is this a stock?
It's one of the ones from Windows 10.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
I've never had the choice of liking it.
So, briefly, the National Scenic Area was created by Congress in 1986, and it includes six counties, three in Oregon, three in Washington. And this bi-state area is treated as a region, and the Gorge Commission maintains the non-federal lands, and the U.S. Forest Service maintains the federal lands. And the six gorge counties implement the Gorge Management Plan through their land use regulation, which is our Title 4240. And the scenic area extends 83 miles on both sides of the river and covers 292,000 acres. And Clark County has approximately 7,800 acres inside the boundaries of the gorge. This is about 3% of our county lands, just east of Washington. And the first management plan for the scenic area was adopted in 91, and it has to be revised every 10 years. So the last update was 2004, and they're in an ongoing update right now, which will be finished in 2020. So you'll be seeing some of those processes go through. And they also, the Gorge Commission can also amend the plan in between major revisions, which is what you have before you today. February 2016, there was an Oregon Court of Appeals decision that required these changes to be made. And all six counties have to amend their development codes to be consistent with the revised management plan. And the code changes pertain to the natural and cultural resources. So the National Scenic Area Act prohibits uses that adversely affect scenic, cultural, natural, or recreation resources. And the first code change is that cultural resource surveys have to be conducted if any element of any land use application requires the survey. And a new grid.
Questions, please. Requires a survey. Is that like a land survey?
It's a cultural resource survey. So it would be subsurface testing, surface surveys, archival or ethnographic research if there's evidence of some archaeological.
I understand that. It's just the way that that reads. A cultural resource survey has to be conducted if any element of any land use application requires a survey. It just reads a little weird.
So if a land division and a land division is occurring at the same time as a building, so the building requires a cultural survey, it triggers it for the whole thing.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
And the second code change is the cumulative effects. So adverse effects are prohibited. A cumulative effect is a type of adverse effect, and its analysis of cumulative effects is triggered. So they'll pick a study area. It could be like a wooded enclave or an entire rural residential area or a key viewing area, and they'll look at the cumulative effects there of the proposed development, seeing what's already built there, and to see if it would or would not generate cumulative effects. There haven't been any cumulative effects on the natural resources. It's mostly the scenic viewing areas that are triggering this. So both of these code changes are just codifying existing practices. This isn't changing anything about the way we're doing. Sometimes we're just adding a phrase, not even a full sentence. It's just codifying existing practices triggered by this lawsuit. And then we're going to the Planning Commission tonight for a public for a work session, and then a public hearing on the 18th. And then we'll be before the board on March 13th to adopt the ordinance.
So the looking at your adverse effect or adverse effects, are those all new definitions?
Yes.
Okay.
It's just explicitly called out. So there are already references all through the code to adversely affect, and now it's being called out as a definition.
Okay, so you pulled it all together,
yes,
put it in one definition, so cumulatively there's no change.
There's no change to practice.
Okay.
Back on that same slide that you had, number six in our handout, it says cultural resource surveys may still be conducted even if a proposed use falls within an exemption. So, is that who decides that may still be conducted, that is allowed to be conducted?
It could be the Gorge Commission. So
even if a use, if a proposed use falls within an exemption of what? An exemption of not having to go through the review process?
Yeah, so if somebody feels that they think there's some archaeological sensitive areas, they could.
Okay, so there's a list of, I'm not familiar with the code, but if there's a list of exemptions and there's a proposed exempt use, the Gorge Commission could still say you still have to, at a minimum, perform a cultural resources survey.
Yeah.
Okay.
So is this taking the Gorge Commission into account? I thought the county actually made the decision on this, and the Gorge Commission was advisory. Is that not the case?
That's not the case. It's actually, because it's a National Scenic Act, the Gorge Commission actually is the manager of these non-federal lands, and they delegate this to the counties to regulate through their code, but we have to comply. We don't really have a choice. They could technically take it back. But
so that's not, that provision is not really changing that review process. Okay. And to Mike's point, I guess, if there was a boundary line adjustment that was an exemption, that would seem a little extreme that that would trigger a cultural resource survey, but this is an example.
It's an example. It could have been reason to believe that there was an archaeological resource there.
As they use the term cultural resource survey, I assume that's different from archaeological predetermination. It's used more in other areas of Clark County, or is that?
I think it's the archaeological resources.
They have different. It's getting more towards, even a predetermination is getting more towards a cultural resources survey. It seems.
The 1950, I believe.
I think it's later than that, even.
Oh, I think it's later now. I think it's 50 years.
Yeah.
That's the
full house.
And soon that's going to change.
Well, every
soon it'll be in our lifetime.
Yeah.
Very distressing.
At least in yours.
Oh, wow. Just wait until he got out. No more control. That's what happens when you lose control. The target is back.
I'm a cultural resource.
That was good.
Nice. I love it.
Yes, that was it. I don't think we need to provide any recommendations to PC on this. It's mandated. Yes. So. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's a beautiful picture. Apparently.
Wonderful pictures. All right. Moving it right along. Mike.
Me.
Your partner isn't here, but...
No, Ott called me. He said, do you need me here? I said, no.
And he called me as well, so you know that...
Yep. He said he was on Micah.
And he said that Mike is the man.
Amen. So, I didn't... Just because we ran over last time, I didn't get a chance to update everyone on what we were doing on the details group and the project delivery stakeholder group. We have, just to bring you guys up to speed, we have a matrix of items that we've been going through monthly. Staff has identified them, has prioritized them as low, medium, and high, has identified them as whether they require a code change, whether they're procedural or policy items. They've collapsed some of those items because they're similar in nature. Some of them are personnel issues, but what we've been focusing on the last couple of weeks is, let's see here, number one is we've run into some, and Peter Tuck and I met with, I don't know, were you at that meeting?
Yeah.
Greg and Ollie and Matt Griswold to go over some transportation issues, mainly what results from redline comments back on engineering plans. Andrew, you've probably experienced this, that transportation is providing redline comments on engineering plans, particularly for residential roadways and industrial roadway designs, to where transportation is requesting us to provide additional information that's outside of code, flat out. Their response to that is, well, that they're trying to address issues that they've seen happen in real life. For instance, emergency vehicle, school bus, and garbage truck turning movements in residential subdivisions along local access roads, turning movements and turning radii on industrial roads, looking to design to the lowest common denominator with regards to trucks, making sure that there's a 1 or 2 foot shy distance, that there's no overlap into oncoming lanes with turning movements. And this has been common on every project that we've had in those areas. And we had a meeting, we meaning Olson, had a meeting with them a while back and explained our concerns, and that nothing really happened as a result of it. But we sat down and we kind of explained to them that you know, they referenced AASHTO and they referenced METCD, of course, and while AASHTO doesn't necessarily address neighborhood or local access roads, and what Matt was quick to point out was that the standards in Clark County Code are minimums, and that, but they are still standards, they're codified, and that's what we designed to because that's what the code says. But we've asked him to come up with a list of the most common red line comments on almost every project that comes out. A lot of these have to do with parking on both sides of the road, on local access residential roads, particularly at curbs, and school buses having difficulty getting through there. And looking at providing some kind of code, proposed code changes so that the designer knows to look for or address these things during the design process. Meaning, can you get a bus around a corner that's a minimum 35-foot centerline radius on a local access road if there's cars parked on both sides of the roads, for instance. Parking's allowed on both sides of the roads. You have the minimum centerline distance that you can design to, but apparently in reality, it's not working out, especially if there's cars parked on the curb on both sides, school bus or emergency vehicle can't get around there. So they're looking to clarify and clean up some of that stuff, and probably one would hope to that they would propose some code language so that the designer would know to either look at this or to simply come out and say, hey, one side, or if you're using a centerline radius of X or less, that one side of the road or the other needs to be signed for no parking.
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
On industrial projects, he did agree that auto turn, which is what we use to show that, you know, our geometry works, is very, very conservative, and that we don't necessarily have to, that it's okay for some off-tracking into oncoming lanes for a foot or two, for 6 or 10 feet or whatever it is, and that you don't need to necessarily have curb return radii, which we're designing at 45 or 50 feet, now having to go to something much bigger because of the possibility of some off-tracking into oncoming lanes. At intersections, it creates these huge, long, almost runway-length pedestrian crossings at these intersections. It increases the amount of impervious surface, and so I think from his standpoint that might be more of a policy statement that would say, hey, a certain amount of off-tracking in oncoming lanes for a certain distance is okay, as shown on auto turn, because we know that it's so conservative that these truck drivers can make these turns no matter what. And we invited him to just stand in our lobby someday and watch some of these WB67 trucks making the turn right in front of our office with somebody parked right there, and they make it. They make it just fine. Well, ish. So anyway, so really what it comes down to is providing the designer some future guidance so that we don't keep coming up with this, having the same red line comments on our plans every single time. I'm sure there's a short list of these items that come up on every project, and for him to then propose some code language so that clarifies things. And really what it came down to was, look, if it's not in code, you can't enforce it if we really push it. But what their response to that is, well, it's a safety issue. We are trying to prevent things from happening down the road that causes issues for the county and having to enforce or later on sign or stripe a road for no parking. So I thought that and providing additional predictability as far as the design is concerned. Is that pretty much right?
Very, very fair. Good summary.
Okay. The meeting was positive. He was receptive, understood the situation, and I think we're to follow up with him this month and have him return to, or at least propose something for our next PDSG meeting.
Okay.
I think is where we left that at our last PDSG meeting. And that work on getting these items into the spring biennials. shame, so that takes care of that. We also had a presentation for cleaning up. We're starting to take a look at the standard plat notes, getting rid of what doesn't need to be there, adding some if necessary. And we had a presentation with regards to plat language for stormwater facilities from a simplification and a clarity standpoint, and addressing some inconsistencies in that. Really what it comes down to is who owns it, who maintains it, and that we just make sure that all of the notes are on the plat. This really isn't an issue as far as our work is concerned here. It's more an issue of outside consultants, the larger builders, the Lennars, that want to have their own language on the plat that is different than what is standard language that we've been putting on all our plats. Inspection of the facilities. There was some discussion about private facilities and maintenance and what the county can do to get them to maintain those. What happens if a homeowners association disbands? What then happens to the facility and how does it continue to be maintained? There was some discussion about the legal ramifications of, you know, what can the county do from a legal standpoint to get a neighborhood or a subdivision to maintain a facility that hasn't been maintained. Chris Horn talked a little bit about what would be included in HOAs, that, you know, they have the ability to assess money for maintenance, that they actually maintain the facility, and that the ownership or the maintenance of that facility can't be amended away within the HOA. So he's reiterated that on a number of occasions. So that's one thing that we're taking a look at. So that was Henry Schottenkirk. I had never met him before. And Jeff Schnabel was there proposing that. And then the last thing that we were looking at, I think we talked about the fact that the county is looking at going to a standardized form for project narratives. Which just simplifies things as far as staff is concerned. I think I brought that up at one of the last meetings. We talked about already staff inviting applicants to come to DEEB to air concerns, grievances, questions about code interpretations, things like that. So that's one of those monitoring items. The last item that I have to discuss here, two of them, one of the last ones, is that we're now taking a look at all of the boilerplate legal documents that the county has presently. They're looking to standardize those. I mean, if you look at one versus the other, it looks like two different people wrote them. They're different fonts or different. I've sent them off to, I'm going to send them to Steve, but I've sent them off to several other attorneys for them to take a look at, provide any comments on. Steve, or Chris Horn, has offered to come back for the next meeting. I'd kind of like to see that part of it through. So we've heard concerns, questions from the legal world that says, well, you know, this really doesn't mean anything, or why do we have to have this if it's in the HOA and documents and you know, man, this just reads terribly. So this is the opportunity for the legal community to have a say in what happens with these updates to the boilerplate. And there's probably what, 12 or 15 of them, I think. So those have all been sent out. Hopefully we'll get some responses to that. And then the last thing, that has been pretty important, but we haven't really talked about, Chris Horn finally gave us some guidance on this, is one of the items early on in this process. Staff is looking to standardize and have one overall checklist for submittals, all submittals. As part of that, there is a requirement for all land division projects to submit a boundary survey, which is different than, say, an existing condition survey, but a boundary survey as part of their preliminary application. If you don't have a current record of survey within 5 years, which is the proposed change, that could be used, then you can use an unreported boundary survey with a statement on there indicating what it's for, that it meets all of the RCW, WAC, and other standard survey requirements for a boundary survey, but that it does not need to be recorded. The county surveyor, Ken Paul, has interpreted RCW 5809 to mean, and I've got the language somewhere in here, but he's interpreting the fact that if you establish a property corner, you need to record a record of survey within 90 days. It's the understanding of the survey community that if you set a monument to establish a corner, that you have to record a record of survey within 90 days. Mr. Paul's interpretation at the time that he was questioned about this indicated that even if you establish a corner via calculating in record deed or through other survey calculations, even on paper, that you have established a corner and therefore you need to record a record survey regardless of whether you have set a monument or not. That runs contrary to the understanding of the survey community that I'm to understand, and I've asked LSAW to take this up. They've been a little hesitant to do that. However, Mr. Horn at our last meeting did find some case law, and the AG's opinion with regards to when does the Survey Recording Act require the filing of a record of survey subsequent to the reestablishment of a corner. What's interesting is that there's one item in here that came up, and it's very, and I'd like to send this back to Mr. Paul, is that when a record of survey is not required, it's specific, RCW 5809090, it says a record of survey is not required for any survey when it is of a preliminary nature, or when a map is in preparation for recording or shall have been recorded in the county under any local subdivision or platting law or ordinance. I think it's pretty clear that that states that when we provide a preliminary boundary survey and we're showing mainly what they're concerned about is any encumbrances have been identified, fencing encroachments, things like that, that might affect the development of the property, that those have been identified. Mr. Paul's assertion is that, well, you know, you've already done all the work, all you need to do now is record it. Yeah, it might seem fairly simple on the surface, but there's still a fee and time associated with that. And besides that, we're going to be recording the plat anyway, so I think what we'll do is turn this back over to staff and have them contact Mr. Paul, indicating that based on the case law here as well as the RCW here, that the preliminary boundary survey is required by the county, can be an unrecorded boundary survey so that we can continue to not to have to record a record of survey when we're going to be turning around shortly thereafter, meaning within a couple of years, recording a plat. So that's the last thing on there. That really kind of ties up one loose end as far as the checklists are concerned. We've vetted those. Not sure what the schedule is with regards to making those go live. Andy Nutbrock with PBS and I have offered to go ahead and use the template for the narrative on our next projects, and we'll see how that plays out too. So that's about it.
Is that just sort of the second chapter? Because we were just fighting a similar battle not too long ago on survey monuments on internal monitoring requirements that seemed to be that was all there was all. They were also taking the kind of ultra conservative view on.
Not familiar with that. This the main thing here is only for preliminary subdivision application only. As far as internal monuments, and I don't know if you're referring to post-monumentation after the plat's been recorded, after the bond.
It was post-modification. They were trying to hold up recorded plats from recording when they were bonded unless all modification was in.
Well, that's impossible.
That was just my point. It seemed like there's sort of a continuum from the county survey, sort of taking this
by having all your monuments in, it would eliminate the resource to bond plat.
Right. And if you put them all in, they would all be destroyed.
Yeah.
And I'd have to be remonumented, which would mean another plat or record survey for all of us.
Correct.
We got monuments.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just wanted to point out there's something.
Okay, keep us up on that.
We had this same conversation with them on the after 6 months or so.
Any written resolution?
We got the last one done.
Yeah, we got it.
Okay, well, that sets precedent, I guess. That's it for me.
Any discussion or questions?
One question, it may not relate, Mike. So that's an impressive amount of stuff that you're covering, so thank you for all the time you're putting.
Sure.
I may totally miss something, and I'm forgetting. Is, you know, I know we talked about for the county on signing off on final plats, on the county manager being able to do that. I know we have an interim. Where did that get left at? Where does that stand?
It's done.
It's done.
So
it's
done. Yeah.
County manager can sign.
I just watched that yesterday. Actually, they gave it to. The annual reviews or whatever.
Code amendments. I think Jan brought it forward.
They gave it to the county manager. I think, you know, the question came up that I was kind of hoping to be a little more clear on. But I think they decided, and Greg, you can speak to this, if the county manager's not around, does that assume that the deputy county manager signs if something happens, God forbid,
that's
you know,
a good,
hot,
that's
whatever.
A good point.
I think they went as far as the deputy county. I don't know after that who.
I think that's where they left it.
Yep.
So
that's
I mean,
my understanding.
We got two people that can sign, and, which is better than, I mean, much better than.
Yeah. The question I have, maybe you have the same question, does it still have to go onto a consent agenda? Does that mean it does not have to go onto a consent agenda?
And now the whole point. I thought was to
avoid
the
The discussion was specific about that. There seemed to be confusion about that. No, it does not go to consent agenda. That was the whole point. It'll go directly to the council. The councilors can, you know, view it, look at it. It's available to them, but it will no longer go to consent agenda. If they're interested in it, they can look at it. But
That's right.
Stating anything.
Straight to the county manager. It's a 2-week delay that on that consent agenda.
I think it'd be more than at the end of the day, we all rush to get it in by Tuesday or Wednesday. I mean, it's always changing, but we all rush to get stuff in, and that ought to help the county too, and not getting a flurry of activity. It'll be more steady.
It'll take away the hate calls too.
I think it's gonna be a huge thing. I know there's issues on final plat that at some point we'll talk about, but
what is implementation of that? So Jan goes back to the board, I think, just this month to get the final vote on it. So
okay.
Just one thought at the beginning. You were talking about the bus routes.
Yes.
Does the school district have those defined? Are those defined?
Yeah. What we do is, for land divisions or even multifamily projects, is a courtesy. Sometimes it's required if you have to go to a hearing for a subdivision. But we'll even do it as a courtesy for multifamily projects, is to send a local school district a letter indicating our proposal, where it is, how many units, and gives them a heads up with regards to facilities. They'll often say, okay, the kids will go to this elementary, this middle, and this high school. The kids will either be bused or they'll have to walk, depending on. And if they have to walk, then we have to make sure that there's off-site, safe off-site walking. My last one that was in the Evergreen School District, they actually provided me with the bus routes, a map of the bus routes for elementary, middle, and high school.
If those didn't theoretically change, that would be the road system that seems like it would need the special attention.
And I think that staff's response to that would be, on a loop road, you're right, they wouldn't. But But what they might say to that is that, well, you never know where the next route is going to be. Or what you're saying is that, well, this is, you know, a neighborhood over here, you know, but what if some road goes through
some point? I'm just trying to be, you know, expediting that thought process.
Right. And it goes beyond the buses, because buses and emergency vehicles have similar turning radiuses. However, from an emergency vehicle standpoint, if they have a car in their way, they're just going to push the car out of the way. John Dunaway's made that very clear, as has other fire marshals in the area. They're just like, hey, if we can't get down the road, we're going to make our way down the road, one way or the other.
All right. Well, I'm glad, Mike, it sounds like you're tackling some transportation things that have been an ongoing concern for many consultants. So.
Yeah, and
working through some issues.
I just hope it results in something.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
Okay. Quick question.
Yes.
Isn't there a short term? Or there are two heads to this committee, right?
Correct.
The short term and the long term.
Short term and the long term.
We're the long term.
You're the big term.
Yeah, they're the big picture. We're the
so I'm wondering what. We haven't heard from the big picture in a long time, I don't think.
They've been waiting for us.
To our credit, we met a lot.
To our credit. Sorry.
We met a lot, often and early, and these guys were kind of like...
We're slackers.
Slackers, but now they're doing that.
Yeah. The work that we're doing is much... there's a lot more work for us to do than it was for them to do.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Because we're tying up a lot of those loose ends that have been looming out there for years, that fall kind of below what this group would look at.
Yeah.
And we're taking this opportunity to kind of look at everything. Susan keeps adding stuff to our list. Yeah. Oh. And we'll come in and she'll be like, hey, by the way, something else has come up.
Good for her.
For instance, one of the other items that we're looking at is the timing of the scheduling of hearings and when those hearings get scheduled vis-a-vis issues that arise during the review process that are significant enough that they might run to a denial standpoint, and whether there's enough time for the applicant to resolve and staff to approve and still keep the hearing date. That's been a huge one. Mm-hmm. Because I know that we scrambled at the last second, up until almost the second, the day and the hour of the hearing, to be shuffling stuff in and staff to review and to give to the hearings examiner to make sure that we've addressed all of staff's concerns. So there is some consideration that the hearing date, potential consideration that the hearing date won't be scheduled. Usually it's scheduled at the time fully complete. And that's a tentative date, I should remind everyone. But it wouldn't be scheduled until, not only after fully complete, but until they have the early issues meeting, which is 30 days out from your fully complete determination, and potentially after all of those early issues have been resolved.
Hmm.
So if anybody has any thoughts on that, we would like to hear about that. Yes, we know that hearing dates are very important. However, staff is getting tasked with doing additional work in a very compressed timeline. And as a result of what the applicant has provided or not provided, applicant or applicant's consultants.
My concern would be, just to give you a quick off the cuff, my
sure.
concern would be, because I've been there many times, probably more than everyone, probably more times than not, at least 50-50, where you're still resolving things at the last minute,
mm-hmm.
here and there. You start extending it out, that takes the urgency away. Everyone has urgency to, and a common interest to go into that hearing examiner with basically arms locked together so that we're not in disagreement, so that we're not arguing to file a lawsuit. They're not, you know, it does put that pressure on everyone to get it resolved. And it's amazing how often it gets resolved right before the hearing, like you said.
The other challenge...
That's the problem I worry that if we extend it out, we don't get that sense of urgency.
And that's understood, but however staff would counter that, there have been occasions where it's like, unless you get this resolved, we have to issue a denial. Well, fine, issue a denial. So staff goes to write a staff report, findings of fact, but it's a denial. Then all of a sudden, at the last second, applicant submits something that fixes everything because they had to have some new traffic counts, and now the traffic counts come in, and now it's like, oh, shoot, now I have to rewrite the staff report, and I don't have enough time to write the staff report.
In that case, I would say maybe they should be. I mean, maybe there's a middle ground somewhere.
I think so, which is why I bring it up today.
Perfect.
Because they understand the importance of keeping the hearing date. They know that if there are minor issues, that's probably not the big deal. It's more the, we're going to issue a denial. And then all of a sudden, the applicant comes back and says, oh, hey, well, what about this? Will this fix it? Concurrency says, yeah, that'll fix it. And now the planner has to rewrite, or the staff member has to rewrite their findings of fact, sometimes whole big sections of it, to try to get into a staff report that has to go to the hearings examiner a week, 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks ahead of the hearing.
Yeah, no, I get it. I worry, though. I think there's going to be huge pushback, just thinking about that, on extending that out 30 days to early issues and then even further and not having a hearing.
Nothing has been proposed or resolved. We're still at the here's the issue stage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and most of the stuff, once it does come, once they do look at potential code policy changes that are going to go live, we'll all have a chance to look at everything in detail before.
Okay. Any other commentary, questions? All right.
You have a softball meeting.
Yeah.
It's going to be a softball
meeting. Next up.
You may want to move to the other side of the table.
No.
Steve's annual report.
Thank you, Steve. I placed this on the agenda. We typically start looking at the first quarter of the biennium to meet with the board, give our annual report of the preceding year, and also lay out our items for 2018-2019. So not that we have to go into all that detail here in this meeting, but I wanted to start to get that kind of, you know, in our thinking. Just looking at the schedule, I think the last year we targeted towards the end of March, seemed to work well, gave us a couple of months for the new chair to get his arms around a biannual plan, get our annual report written, give us a meeting or two to look at that in here. So if we were to stay with that, that would put us on Wednesday, March 28th. Is kind of a tentative date. If that's agreeable to everyone, I will proceed with our admin staff with the board and get that on the agenda. So,
Wednesday, March 28th. Sorry,
Wednesday, March 28th. Yeah, as a tentative date, I'll have to confirm that with the board's staff.
Spring break is in April.
Yes,
it should be the first week of April.
First week of April. Yeah.
So it'd be just preceding that.
Just preceding that, yeah.
Not that it's set in stone, but I think our practice has been for the previous year's president. So, Jeff, you would take the lead on actually presenting the annual report. And then, Steve, you would take the lead on the 2018-2019 work plan. Both of you, of course, would kind of team up on that. So if that sounds good, we'd stay with that same format. And then lastly, we did include a copy of last year's annual report and work plan. And so if you'd please look that over, I'd say over the coming weeks, and then as we come into our February meeting, it'd be nice to really start to get into the weeds with that document and help to formulate for both Jeff and Steve, respectively, what they'd like to include in their annual report and the upcoming work plan. So Any other thoughts on that?
Are you, so do, are we going to make that a standing item then in February and March?
That was my intent. Yeah. Put that on the agenda. Yeah,
I like that.
give us at least 30 to 45 minutes to really comb through the document. What do we want to highlight in terms of accomplishments in 2017? What do we want to really bring forward in our work plan 18 to 19? So,
you know,
we would use February to, I'd say, really plow through it, and then we'd still have March to maybe fine tune it a little bit further. So.
I agree, and I think it would help a lot to get the input because, like, you know, Mike, we talked a little bit after the last meeting. This year's been a very reactionary year, and I got to wrap my arms, what have we reacted to? I know we've reacted to a lot,
yeah.
And I know I'm forgetting a lot that we've reacted to, but it's been reactionary as well as accomplishing a lot of stuff, I think. But it would be very helpful to have that discussion with everyone and put our heads together.
Yeah, what I might suggest is that we schedule at least half an hour, if not 45 minutes, at maybe the next meeting to walk through what I've done in the past for 2 years, is go through all of the minutes and everything from over the past year and even sliding into the year before to make sure that we've captured everything. Because some things don't necessarily pop out, some things just come up. And then, you know, like the work groups that we all sit on, you know, that's not necessarily in our agendas or in our minutes, but we are all involved to a certain degree with some of these other small groups, so we want to highlight those too, and the accomplishments from those. Sometimes we just have them as a line item in there. Deep members have sat on the final plat, and that's it. Well, okay, well, what happened as a result of that? No, I think we need to highlight those two.
One other thing that does come to mind, and I don't know if the council will have a new county manager by that time, but that may be the case. And so I just suggest that rather than think, hey, everybody knows this, we're going to, perhaps we may have a brand new county manager, and this would be a good opportunity to really lay out, you know, kind of a broad spectrum of everything that Deeb's about and does and has done. And so I think make a good first impression there should we have a new county manager on board at that time.
That sounds right.
Great.
And speaking for myself, any help we can get would be... I want to speak for you, Steve.
Oh, please do.
I figured that you would be in agreement with me. Yeah.
All right. Any other discussion on that one?
Yeah. Good. I don't
know. Oh, we got public comment.
So I got thinking about filibustering for a little while here.
Oh, what?
All right then. Public comment.
Jimmy Stewart.
Before public comment, do we have much of an agenda set for next month other than I would like to propose an item.
Just keep me on as a stand.
I will, yes.
Right.
So as they right now, those two items. So we've got continued updates on the project delivery details group and then the D-Ban or report and work plan. So
as we may or may not know, the ecology has also put out for comment changes to the phase one NPDES permit, and the draft comments, I believe, are due this month sometime. I've looked at the changes. There's not a lot of substantive stuff in there from a legal perspective, but I'd be kind of interested in what it means from an engineering perspective, maybe from the county's folks that are maybe implementing that, what they kind of see on the horizon.
Sure.
So the bottom line is that, you know, the ecology is basically saying we're not hearing from LID. It's still too new to be out there, but there's still some other things that are in there that I don't, as a non-engineer, I don't understand.
Yeah.
To throw one thing out as well, if I can,
Mr. Chairman.
Final plat.
Yeah.
So I'm getting a lot of unsolicited blowback again on final plat. We had a meeting a couple of months ago, and
but she's back there cheerleading.
Oh, okay. Well, that's not one of the unsolicited comments. So there's another unsolicited comment. I don't know what's going on, but I will do my best, and I will bring everyone back together and see if we can figure out what's going on. I just don't know what's going on, but there's people are not happy. I think on both spectrums, you know, I think Susan's really working hard to try to figure it out. But there's I'm getting, you know, surveyors and people that I normally don't hear from that haven't been involved in this group, and this group is growing now. In our last time we met, so something's not, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'll try to get a meeting before our next February meeting. So that might be something we add to the agenda if we're able to get a meeting together and at least give an update.
Placeholder on there.
Yeah, and at least I'll give you an update of what people are saying and all. I mean, we had this thing dialed in. I think that what the commissioners just did with delegating is going to really help. But that's not the issue. I think people are getting very frustrated with the process, and we just need to figure out what. And it may not be anything we can resolve, but
okay. So you'll continue to take.
I will absolutely continue, and I will plan on. I didn't want to do it before the, you know, during the holidays and all, so I will plan on tomorrow, the next day, trying to get everyone's schedules together and set a meeting before our next meeting.
Sounds great.
See if we can quell that.
Okay, we have a full agenda in February.
we just, and I mean, it may or may not be, or I could just give a quick update that we met and we're still working on it. But sure. It is starting to swell up again, where I'm getting these calls and people are getting frustrated. So
I think the stormwater stuff will take a while.
You think what?
The stormwater stuff will take a while.
Yeah,
there's some stuff.
And stormwater would take precedent.
Yeah, well, and there's some stuff in there about baseball.
Yeah. And you need, are you normally on that invite list for final plat? But you were giving me a heads up that you want to talk about final plat, right? Or not, Steve?
You mean a public comment right now?
No, I'm just saying in general, you have some issues on...
For us, yes.
So would you like me to add you to
Absolutely.
The...
Absolutely.
Okay. Because the more input, the better. And it was kind of a semi, you know, we didn't get great attendance, but it was really good. But last time, it was like we had like almost every survey, tons of surveyors.
So compared to
John and I showed up last time.
That's right. Okay. Good. It was a pretty
big
turnout.
It was good. And then the following day, we had one of the county.
Okay. And then Susan, I'll work with Susan. She was going to get back to us and all that.
Right. And I think our meeting with the bonded recording went over fairly well. I think the big hang up we had was the postponement.
Yeah. So, okay.
I haven't tried it. Although we still don't have the final.
I haven't
checked the checklist of who was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Where you see. That's why I was kind of giving her up. Still not. It's like you said, we're just like that.
Just not, I know. I know, we get it. Thank you.
All right. Anything else before we hit
public? I was just going to give a quick comment on.
It's your turn.
For your annual report, please make sure you include, I mean, I know on behalf of Bajo, we really value, especially in the last year, you being able to utilize the deed for bringing the issues forward. And in fact, getting them resolved. And so, even though it may seem reactionary, I think part of the, at least my understanding has always been that part of the purpose of the deal was to be that vehicle, which by definition means reactionary. So, I think that can be a good thing. The only other thing I was going to say is next week I'm going to be putting out about half a dozen pages of comments for this CityGate analysis that's going on, a consulting analysis. And our comments will overlap. There will be small picture stuff, and there will be some big picture stuff in there too that basically just pertains to the permitting process.
Can you copy us on this?
Yeah, I'll make sure. I'll make sure Dave gets circulated.
Awesome.
Comments. You know, a quick example of small picture stuff is deciding what codes we're applying to materials. We had an excruciating issue with some fasteners not too long ago. Some truss fasteners,
Oh, from a building standpoint?
Yeah, yeah, just right down to the construction standpoint. So you got to realize we're vertically integrated, so I'm commenting all up and down. So
yep, yep.
So on, you know, on the big picture side, we know we have a lot of codes that have discretionary provisions in them. It would be so helpful to have some sort of a defined process when there's a difference of opinion on what's clearly a discretionary requirement. For example, the requirement of transitioning in the PUD ordinance. There's no definition of that. There's no way to really, you know, and we got into a dispute on a project. What does that mean? And there really doesn't, isn't a good view. You don't want to sit there and fight with the you know, line reviewer, and I always hate going over somebody's head when it, you know, wish there was a way to resolve it, but there really just isn't, because there isn't. So that's kind of a big picture thing that would be nice to get addressed. How can we come to a sort of how can we negotiate the communities of the code?
Steve, if you'd like to forward me those, I'll make sure they get routed to Deep. So, yeah.
Anything else?
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How's the 2018 outlook?
What?
Yeah, how's the 2018 outlook?
I think it was third, four, 5 years ago, actually.
We're adjourned.
Had a Deep meeting on my birthday.
So, my last meeting, I went until 4:32. This is not fair.
The last one I did for you, I went until like 4:45.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I feel better.
Oh, yeah.
Nice job. Welcome aboard. Good. Sorry to be so gay.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for your work over the last
year. Thanks for your service.
Thank you.
For the last did a great job.
Work together to fix some, you know what, recording off.
Recording off. Kelly.